thank y'all for joining us today. And we really have to start off with the talk of suspensions. We found out on Monday that Ronnie Perkins, Ramondre Stevenson, and Trajan Bridges would be suspended. There was some hope of possibly an appeal coming through, but none of those guys will play in Saturday's Peach Bowl. Abby, let's start off with you. Which one of these you think is most important for the Sooners, or the biggest loss for the Sooners?
I think the last time we talked about this, I said that it might be Ramondre Stevenson, just because of how OU has been playing lately and the more grinded out style, really running the ball a lot. But thinking about it a lot more over the last week, I think probably Ronnie Perkins, just because of how effective he's been up front for the Sooners. And yeah, I just think that he, especially going up against an offense like LSU's, will be a big loss for OU's defense.
And what about you, Barry? You think Ronnie Perkins is the biggest loss out of those three guys?
Oh yeah, I think it's Perkins. I mean, Stevenson was a really nice change of pace, big guy, burly tailback, who were also not bad in the open field. But, you know, tailback has not been an issue at Oklahoma since, I don't know, 1990 or 91, when Jerry Gibbs ran out of tailbacks. They always got enough tailbacks. I think T.J. Pledger's a really good player. Lincoln was very effusive in his praise yesterday, T.J. Pledger. Offense isn't the issue with this team against LSU. They need all hands on deck defensively. They don't have them. This is an LSU offense that seems to have one minor weakness, which is that Joe Burrow is susceptible to getting sacked on occasion, and Ronnie Perkins is the number one sack master on this team, and he's out. So I think Sooners are really going to miss Ronnie Perkins.
Now, what, Barry, though, if we threw in Delarian Turner-Yell with his injury, also not expected to play in the Peach Bowl, is Turner-Yell's absence or Perkins' absence more detrimental to the Sooners' chances of pulling off this upset?
I think it's Perkins, just because he's a better player. He's more consistent. However, the depth is better at defensive end than it is at safety. I mean, Alex Grinch has been asked almost on a weekly basis since August, virtually every week, he's been asked about the depth at safety. Have you found any more safeties, you know, to help those three that you play? Is there anybody behind them? Because Alex likes to go with the hockey line defense. He likes to play a lot of different guys. He has not been able to find those guys at safety. Every week he's asked, and the answer is always no. The depth has not improved at safety, and now they're going to have to play Justin Broyles in particular, one of those guys who Alex Grinch has continually told us he can't count on.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see, because yesterday, and talking about Monday, Lincoln Riley was asked specifically about Justin Broyles, and he said, obviously, they're confident about the position, but he sort of danced around Broyles, didn't really come out and say anything about him definitively, which, one, that's what Lincoln Riley sort of does, but it also makes you wonder a little bit if they look to somebody, you know, maybe one of the younger guys, maybe a Woody Washington or somebody like that that hasn't played a ton this year, if maybe they give them a chance and roll the dice rather than Justin Broyles, who, it's been pretty clear, as you said, Barry, that the Alex Grinch and the coaches don't have full confidence in their ability behind Pat Fields and Delarian Turner-Yell to field competitive safeties out there.
Yeah. Let me ask, what did Grinch – did you get a chance to talk to Grinch today?
Yeah, we just actually got done talking to him about 30 minutes ago.
And exactly what did he say about the whole issue, not of Perkins, but of Turner-Yell?
Well, he wasn't asked directly about Justin Broyles in specifics. We asked him about the depth of that position, sort of the same questions that we've asked him pretty much all year. And he said he felt good for it. He said He said those guys that are going to play have significant reps. But the two, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the two most used players on this team as far as amount of plays have been the two safeties in Delarian Turner-Yell and Pat Field. So they've done a lot of rotating at a lot of spots, but safety hasn't been one where they've rotated much. Justin Broyles got to play some pretty significant minutes in the Big 12 title game because of Brendan Radley-Hiles' injury. It appears Radley-Hiles is able to go, but going to be really interesting to see what they do there, given the repeated lack of confidence in that group. But Abby, let's go to you for a little bit. I hope you're still around, running around. Yes. Chicago, up there. What to you maybe is the biggest question about what Oklahoma does defensively on Saturday to maybe try to work around some of these personnel changes that they've been forced to make?
I mean, I think the biggest question kind of is what we've been talking about, what they do with the defensive backs. How do they stop, Joe Burrow as a passer, and how do they contain these great wide receivers that LSU has? I think that, a guy like Parnell Motley has been playing really well for OU lately, and so they have some hope with the defensive backs. But I think that, yeah, for me, the biggest question defensively is what, like we've been talking about, just how do they move guys around? Who do they trust? What do they do there?
And Barry, along those lines, what do you think maybe is the best solution up front with Redmond as far as bringing pressure, finding ways to get after Joe Burrow and potentially bring him down for sacks? Is it moving somebody around? Is it as simple as just plugging Marcus Stripling into the spot that Ronnie Perkins was in? Is it something else?
Well, I mean, I think they're going to have to flip Redmond and or Stokes. You want your best 11 players on the field, and Stripling is not one of the best 11. So I think you'll see more Redmond and Stokes playing together. Again, as much as LSU throws, as often as they're likely to snap the ball, you can't. I mean, you're going to have to use Stripling and some other guys. You got to do some platooning. But you know, when it's crunch time and you want your best 11 on the field, I don't think Stripling is one of those 11. So this is going to require some adjustments for Alex Grinch in that defense. But I think it's feasible. You know, when we call Ronnie Perkins the best pass rusher, he is, but that doesn't mean he's not Oboe Okoronkwo. He's not head and shoulders above everybody else. He's just, right, you know, the best pass rusher on a pretty good pass rush. It's a case of you just want all hands on deck. It's not losing a superstar, but you are losing an effective player on a defense that really needs. Now, the truth about OU's defense is the Sooners have, I would say, that defense has 8 or 9 really effective players. And the way you beat LSU is you have 11 effective defensive players. And when you're going in the other direction, when you lose one of them, it puts you further from victory. So that's where they're at. So the best players remaining have to play more, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. It'll be interesting to see what they do. My thought would be that Redmond would move to the other side, but of course Stokes is a possibility as well. But like you said, Ronnie Perkins isn't he isn't Oboe on a team full of guys who can't do anything. They've been able to be a decent pass rush team in some other places. Heck, Jalen Redmond, the number of plays that he has played is not nearly as much, I believe, as Ronnie Perkins, but he's only half a sack behind him at 5.5 sacks for second on the team behind Perkins. So I think they can figure out ways to get after Joe Burrow in some different ways. It's just going to be, can they do it enough and consistently enough to disrupt an LSU offense that's really, really good. But we're going to take a break right there. We're going to be back on the other side with more Peach Bowl talk from down here in Atlanta. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm your host, Ryan Aber, here in Atlanta. On the phone, we have Abby Bitterman from Chicago, Barry Trammell from presumably Norman, Oklahoma. Abby, the big revelation today was that Oklahoma defensive coordinator Alex Grinch has never seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Yeah, I've been following along with everything on Twitter, and I saw that. And, you know, of all the things that have come out in Atlanta so far, most of them were already known, but this is completely shocking. I mean, with a name like Grinch, I mean, I'm sure he's been made fun of for it a ton. With my last name, I mean, I make my last name a joke in the email when I give my email at the end of every podcast. You know, I just roll with it. If my last name was Grinch, I would have at least seen what everyone was talking about by now.
Yeah, Barry, one, do you buy that Alex Grinch has never seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
I actually choose not to buy it. I do not. if the Oklahoma defensive coordinator's last name was Alex Schwarzendruber and declared he had never seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas, I would say false. And for a guy to be his last name Grinch and to have never seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas, it defies belief. I don't know what the motives of Grinch are trying to lead us down this wayward path, this subversive path, but I would need further discussions with him to find out the root of such travesty. Mm-hmm. My goal for the Peach Bowl is for the Sooners to win with a defensive performance for the ages, so that I can write that the Oklahoma defense, its brains were full of spiders and its garlic in its soul. So that's what I'm trying to get to here. I don't know how a guy avoids How the Grinch Stole Christmas, one of the all-time great, one of the all-time great performances in American television history. Forget Christmas, just that 30 minute How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Whoville, and the Grinch and the whole scene. It's a technological marvel for something made in the 1960s. And Alex Grinch, if Alex Grinch has not seen it, he himself has garlic in his soul.
and so if Oklahoma's defense does put together that kind of performance and they get after Joe Burrow, are you going to say that they had LSU mangled up and tangled up knots?
I don't know. I actually heard How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the song, last weekend. My granddaughter had a concert, and their ensemble sang it. And as soon as I heard, "Brain is full of spiders, they've got garlic in their soul," I said, "If there's a miracle in Atlanta, I'm using those terms." So that's my two favorite
terms. It writes itself.
Now, there's all kinds
it
of great.
It does write itself.
There's all kinds of great phrases in that. And the best thing I thought is this line of questioning, by the way, started really early in Alex Grinch's media session today, which was just him sitting at a table with about four or five of us gathered around. It was very informal, very laid back, and he was having fun with it. But he made a Dr. Seuss reference, I think unintentionally, in his answer about it. He said, this is what he said. He said, "I tell everyone that's where I got my mental toughness. That's one. Most people that say it act like they're the first ones to say it, which is exciting for them, but we embrace it. My wife, she married into it. I tell everybody her last name was Blazer, and the places I could have gone if my last name was Blazer. So, oh, the places you'll go if your last name is Blazer, apparently.
I feel like you should have taken hers last name. What a fabulous last name, Blazer. That's a fantastic last name. That's one of the five best last names I've ever heard, Blazer. Yeah. We named cars after that word. We named sports coats after that word. We named NBA basketball teams with that word.
Yeah, it's a fantastic one. What we're sitting here on Christmas Eve. Alex Grinch said his favorite Christmas movie was Christmas Vacation, which is a fantastic choice. Abby, what's yours?
I think that I would have to go with either I love the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Charlie Brown Christmas.
All right. Solid choices. Barry?
Now, are we talking 30 minutes or
movies? No, we're talking movies. What's your favorite Christmas movie? And the 30-minute ones.
Full-length movie.
Abby, if you want to add something more to yours, I mean, I don't have any issues against the 30-minute ones as well. But, Barry, what's your favorite Christmas full-length movie?
It would be It's a Wonderful Life, but I actually think it's not really a Christmas movie. It just happens to be set at Christmas time.
Okay,
they could have set it.
So I imagine
they could have set it in July and not really changed much.
Okay, so
I'm going to go. What's that?
Oh, I was going to say, so along those lines, I would assume that you don't believe Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
No, I do not believe Die Hard is a Christmas movie, for crying out loud. You now polluted this podcast. The podcast has been polluted. But I'm going to go with Home Alone. I love Home Alone. When Michael Jordan is on the train track going around in the silhouette, rocking around the Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock, that's one of the great scenes in the history of cinema. So, I love Home Alone.
It is.
I do love to.
Hey, Abbey Road. You all love Home Alone. It's set in suburban Chicago.
It sure is. And I do love Joe Pesci. He's one of my favorite actors. So I think that if we're going full length movie, I will also go with Home Alone.
Yeah, Barry tried to talk it out of it being a Christmas movie. I still think the one movie that I've got to see every Christmas time is It's a Wonderful Life. Although I also love A Christmas Story. Been watching it since I was a kid. We actually last night went to a place that had a pop-up Chinese restaurant in their little loft area that was just like four or five tables up there that did Bo Ling Chop Suey Palace from A Christmas Story. I was disappointed. I thought they would have the movie playing. They did not, but we were able to get some really good Chinese food, but I probably got to go with A Christmas Story, but It's a Wonderful Life is a fantastic movie as well.
It's big time. It's big. Love Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what. I will bet that Jimmy Stewart, before he died, had seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That's my prediction for the day.
Yeah, you surely right. I mean, How the Grinch Stole Christmas was what, made in the 60s, right?
I believe that to be the case, yes, mid-60s.
And Jimmy Stewart lived to 1997, so he had plenty of Christmas opportunities to see How the Grinch Stole Christmas. So I'm sure he did.
So,
but let's take a quick detour back to this game, Barry. Calendar for this game is so much different than a lot of bowl games recently. Part of that's due to how late everything fell, late Thanksgiving, which helped to have a late Big 12 title game, a late Heisman Trophy week, and then this game is pretty early because of, frankly, the Sugar Bowl being pretty stubborn about not moving off of New Year's Day. Do you think that changes the dynamic of this game at all with preparations, given that there's a week or two fewer of downtime between having played a game?
you know, I don't think it really has a big effect because both schools were involved in the award circuit, going to Atlanta, going to New York. They both had Heisman finalists. Joe Burrow won it, so he got a day or two extra of the revelry. But if you're Trevor Lawrence and you don't go to New York, which he didn't, you know, that's an advantage in my mind for Clemson because, you know, you went to New York. You know what a whirlwind it is. It's not just the time, but just the emotional energy, I think, can be a distraction. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. So I think all in all, OU and LSU, I think they're offset by the calendar. I think the calendar is absurd, by the way. No reason you couldn't be playing this game on January 1st. But since it is when it is, it works out evenly, I think, for the Tigers and the Sooners.
What about you, Abby?
I think that, I don't know, you don't have as much time to, you know, give players some rest and stuff. But I think that, you know, maybe it helps to, you know, play a little bit quicker. You haven't had as much time off in between, and so you're still like in that mindset, in that mode, and it's not kind of just one game out of nowhere. So I think that from when we talked to a couple of players the other week, they didn't seem too concerned about it, and I think that I don't think the compressed timeline should be that big of an issue.
Yeah, I mean I don't think it's a negative at all. I think it's the only potential is to be a positive in helping this game be played a little bit cleaner and not have to shake off so much rust. But we'll see if that's the case here on Saturday. But we're going to take a quick break here on the Sooners Extra Podcast, be back with our third and final segment for the day. The Sooners Extra Podcast, as always, is presented by Zaxby's. If you could, go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast and drop us a review. We would really appreciate it. Thank you so much. This is a Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Once again, I'm Ryan Aber here with Barry Trammell and Abby Bitterman. I'm in beautiful downtown Atlanta. Abby is in Chicago. Barry's in Norman. Barry's getting ready to come out here on Christmas night. Barry, you ever spent much time in Atlanta?
I have. Yeah, the answer. The answer is yes. I spent 3.8 years in Atlanta covering the Summer Olympics in the summer of 1996. Longest 18 days of my life. I did not. Atlanta's okay. There's nothing special about Atlanta. When it comes to the New Year's Six Bowls, there are six locales, five of them destination spots, plus Atlanta. So you got Southern California, South Florida, New Orleans, Phoenix, and even Dallas. I mean, some people wouldn't get too excited about Dallas. Dallas is nice for us because it's convenient. We know our way around. But I guess Atlanta is the Dallas of the Southeast. So, it's foreign territory, for crying out loud. Sooners have never played a football game in the state of Georgia. And that's a little difficult to believe because there's a lot of football going on in Georgia. Georgia Tech, Georgia, and the Peach Bowl, and the kickoff classic thing that they do in Atlanta. So Sooners have never made it over there. But that changes in four days. Hey, let me ask you about this, the tone and the tenor and sort of the attitude of the Sooners in Atlanta. Lincoln Riley has sort of embraced this attitude of, hey, we're the underdog. Nobody respects us. Nobody thinks we ought to be here. Is that legit? Is that getting old to some people? I mean, it seems to me the Sooners get a lot of respect from everybody. They don't necessarily think they can win this game, but this is a team or a program that year after year gets all kinds of respect from the American landscape. So, what are the Sooners sort of embracing this idea that they're disrespected?
Well, I think Some of them are. I think every team likes to play that disrespect card, even when it's not there. I mean, we've seen it with Oklahoma inside the Big 12, heck, and they've dominated that absolutely over the last half decade. So some of them are, but like Jalen Hurts, I actually talked to him a little bit about this morning, the different way that this team is perceived versus really any other game that they played, and it's sort of the opposite for LSU in some of the big games that they played this year, where they were the underdog, and then now they enter this as thought of as this big bad behemoth over there from the SEC. Jalen Hurts sort of brushed it off and said, it's no different for us. The outside perception doesn't matter. But Lincoln Riley has clearly acted like the outside perception does matter, and that, we're going to show up and play and see what happens, basically what he said on ESPN. And I think that can be sort of freeing for a team in some ways. You don't have the weight of the expectations on you. But at the same time, there's all kinds of expectations on this Sooners team just because it's been so long since they played in a title game. And if they're able to win a couple since they've won a national championship, I mean, it's hard to think that it's longer since the Bob Stoops national championship in 2000 to now, from between those two points and from the 1985 national championship to the 2000 national title. So there's certainly a hunger among this fan base for success that I think maybe mitigates any talk about Oklahoma being the decided underdog in this game, and we're just happy to be here.
You know, I never thought about it until you said it, but same is true from the last Bud Wilkinson national title, 56, to the first Barry Switzer national title, 74, 18 years.
Yeah.
So this is an historic drought. It's the longest drought in OU history. Between titles.
Yeah, since they won the first one.
That's right. So that's interesting. Of course, this is not a team we expect to win the title. Last year was not a team we expect to win the title. Where the Sooners really missed it was since 17. They could have won that championship. Mm-hmm. They were as good as Georgia. They were as good as Alabama. They had Georgia on the ropes. They let them off. They had a chance to win the game in overtime, 4th-and-1. 3rd-and-1, don't make it. 4th-and-1, blink and kick a field goal, lose in the second overtime. That's the one that got away. If Oklahoma wins that national title in 17, all this talk is non-existent. All this idea that the Sooners can't win a big one or they're not as good. I mean, they'd be like Ohio State. They'd have one of these national titles and in the playoff and that had been there a bunch, and they would be looked at as, you know, maybe not on Alabama and Clemson's rung, but right below them, very close. And now they're not. They're just looked at as sort of a second-tier program underneath the big boys. So that's the one that got away. They're going to have to, you know, to win this title, to win this game, they're going to have to spring an upset of historic proportions because they're 13.5-point underdogs.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, I wanted to ask you what have you learned about LSU through talking to some players and coaches so far this week?
Oh, I think it's been interesting to see the personality of LSU maybe contrasted with Oklahoma. When you think about Oklahoma, which so much of it comes from Lincoln Riley's personality and Jalen Hurts' personality. Which Lincoln Riley is everything close to the vest, and Jalen Hurts is doesn't say much, and it's all a business approach for him. LSU is a little bit different. Ed Orgeron, I thought, gave some really insightful answers yesterday when asked about Oklahoma, especially their offense. I'm actually going to blog this relatively shortly, talking about the counterplay that OU runs so much, and one, how tough that is to stop, and two, Lincoln Riley sort of encouraging Ed Orgeron to commit to it and make it a part of their offense. So Lincoln Riley has played a big role, I think, sort of unwittingly at the time, in making Oklahoma or LSU's offense what it is. And then another thing, yesterday he got to sit down for a few minutes, really one-on-one with LSU defensive end Rashard Lawrence, who had some really interesting things to say about Jalen Hurts, his progression, because Rashard Lawrence played against Jalen Hurts in that 2017 LSU-Alabama game. So he's seen him up close, the progression that Jalen Hurts has made. And then also the struggles that LSU had defensively in the game against Ole Miss, which Rashard Lawrence said that Ole Miss's offense, structurally, they're obviously not as good, but structurally reminded him a lot of Oklahoma's. Ole Miss, if I'm not mistaken, scored 37 points in that game, and talked about how difficult it was containing the quarterback and how difficult it's going to be to try to contain Jalen Hurts on Saturday. So I think that those were a couple of the most interesting things I heard from the LSU side over the last couple of days.
Well, it's a game where the Oklahoma offense is going to have to play well. I don't know. The one thing missing from this OU offense compared to earlier in the season and compared to years past is the explosiveness, the home run plays. You know, Marquise Brown, C.D. Lamb has become more of a possession receiver than a home run threat. So my question is twofold. One, can the Sooners find a couple of home run plays? Can Charleston Rambo get loose? Can C.D. make a 60-yard play? And the follow-up question, if not, can Oklahoma sustain long, grinded out drives? They've done it against Baylor. They've done it against Baylor. Can they do it against LSU? If they do, they have a chance.
Yeah, I think they're going to need to at some point to grind it out, especially with Kennedy Brooks on the ground. And obviously we know how great of running back or runner Jalen Hurts is. I say running back because pretty much when he has the ball, it's a running back style. But I think they're going to need those home run plays. It can't be constant, 6, 7, 8 minute drives. They've got to hit some home runs on them, and I think it's got to be with guys like CeeDee Lamb. Clearly, Charleston Rambo has that ability as well. But they really need CeeDee Lamb to have a really big game in this one, and he's had a stretch in late October or mid-October, really early October to early November, where he was absolutely phenomenal, and then he missed that game against Baylor and really hadn't been the same since. They need him to be the player he was against Texas, against Kansas State, against Iowa State had a big some big plays there. They need that CeeDee Lamb, I think, in order to be successful. We saw last year how much not having their number one wide receiver healthy hampered them against Alabama when Marquise Brown wasn't in there and wasn't able to contribute much at all. They need CeeDee Lamb to go out and be the CeeDee Lamb, I think, that a lot of us have seen all year long.
Well, that would be a nice addition, because we know CD is capable. We know that CD has got that kind of talent and ability. But, for whatever reason, the way this Oklahoma offense has sort of morphed, he's become, I'm trying to think of a likeness in Oklahoma history. I don't know if there is one. Joaquin Iglesias is a guy that became more of a possession receiver and was really good. Now, C.D. Lamb's way better than Joaquin Iglesias, but it's just a case of anything they can get in chunks, anything 30 yards and more would be a huge boon to this offense and relieve a little of the pressure of having to continually make 6 yards on first down or convert third and five. Be a huge, huge help, I think, to this offensive ability to try to dominate this game.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think it would be much better for them to be able to break off a couple of those chunk plays at least, because eventually LSU's defense is going to have some success. They've got talent across the board. They've struggled at times this year, but they're still a really good defense. And I think it would be better for them to pop off a couple of those big plays. But that's going to be interesting to see. Well, we're going to wrap it up there on the Sooners Extra podcast. You can reach out to me, RABER at Oklahoman.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RYABER. Abby?
Follow me on Twitter at Abby_Bitterman and reach me through email, as always, abitterman@oklahoman.com.
And Barry?
Just call me, 405-760-8080. Don't call me tomorrow afternoon, Christmas afternoon, because I'll be in the air a good part of the day. You probably won't get me. I follow the FAA regulations of turning off my phone.
Well, that's good. Probably wouldn't get much reception up at 35,000 feet or whatever you're going to get to tomorrow. But Barry, looking forward to seeing you down here in Atlanta tomorrow night. Thank you so much for joining the Sooners Extra podcast, which, as always, is presented by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken
and fresh-made salads.
Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today.
Or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast.
You can check out our work every day at oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anyway.